As we come now to Psalm 55, we see David, the author of this psalm, trusting God against a treacherous enemy who came against him. Now, this psalm is given a title in the original Hebrew text. We find that in the words that come before verse 1. And the title of this psalm is, To the Chief Musician with Stringed Instruments, a Contemplation of David. Like many of the psalms, this one was addressed to the chief musician, who was either something of a worship leader or music director for the priests and the Levitical singers and musicians of ancient Israel, or it could be a reference to God himself with the recognition of the fact that music is God's invention and he is the chief or the greatest musician. Obviously, this psalm was written for stringed instruments of some kind, a lyre, a harp, whatever it would be. And it's also said to be a contemplation of David. Now, the psalm describes some kind of rebellion or power struggle against David. And a key leader in the struggle was a trusted associate who betrayed David. That person is unnamed in this psalm. And because of this, the city is dangerous because of the rebellion. And because of all these difficulties, David cried out to God. Now, most commentators fit this psalm to Absalom's rebellion, that is, the son of David, Absalom, to his rebellion against David in 2 Samuel chapters 15 through 18. And they identify the trusted associate as a man named Ahithophel, who was a trusted counselor of David, but went over and betrayed David and became one of Absalom's counselors. Parts of this psalm seem to fit Absalom's rebellion, but then there's other parts that don't seem to fit it. It's hard to imagine David wishing Absalom to hell, as verse 15 of this psalm seems to indicate, when he didn't even really want Absalom to even die. It may be that the events connected with this psalm are unrecorded in the sacred history of the life of David. Maybe we don't find them in the book of 2 Samuel, or maybe just for some reasons that we don't completely comprehend, they really do fit Absalom's rebellion. So let's take a look at this psalm and see how it really moves in three parts, as we'll discuss at the very end in a quote from G. Campbell Morgan. But it moves from fear to fury to faith. Here's the first part, the fear, beginning now with verse 1. We find in Psalm 55, verses 1 through 3, these words. Give ear to my prayer, O God, and do not hide yourself from my supplication. Attend to me and hear me. I am restless in my complaint, and I moan noisily because of the voice of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked, for they bring down trouble upon me, and in wrath they hate me. The psalm begins with a heartfelt cry unto the Lord. Give ear to my prayer, O God, and do not hide yourself from my supplication. We sense in David's prayer here that he felt that God was distant, as if God was hiding himself from David. Therefore, he asked God to, and this is in verse 2, to attend to me and hear me. It's as if David believed he could face almost anything with a strong sense of God's presence and pleasure in his life, but without it, he couldn't face anything. Now, absent this strong sense of God's presence and pleasure, look at how he describes himself in verse 2. He says, I am restless in my complaint and moan noisily. At the beginning of this psalm, David has very little peace. He was restless, complaining, moaning, and he even says that his moans were noisy. He needed help from God. I kind of like what Charles Spurgeon said, and just a little side comment on that. He said that it's a comfort that we can be so personal or familiar with our God. And then this is what Spurgeon said, quote, we may not complain of him, but we may complain to him. And that's what David was doing here. He says of his enemies or his opposition here in verse 3, they bring down trouble upon me. David was troubled by the voice of his enemy. What's interesting is this psalm seems to emphasize the singular of an enemy instead of a collection of them, but it's possible that it's taking the singular for the many. Anyway, he talks about the voice of the enemy and the oppression of the wicked. These people hated David, and they caused great trouble for him. Now, in verses 4 through 8, David is fighting his fears. Take a look at this. Starting at verse 4, and we're going to read through verse 8, where David says this. My heart is severely pained within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. Fearfulness and trembling have come upon me, and horror has overwhelmed me. So I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. Indeed, I would wander far off and remain in the wilderness. Selah. I would hasten my escape from the windy storm and tempest. So David begins at verse 4, again, continuing on his theme from the first three verses, declaring unto God and to anybody else who will listen, my heart is severely pained within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. The stress of the crisis that David was in caused him mental anguish, and this was increased by the real danger of death. David believed, probably legitimately so, that he might die in this process. In this crisis, I should say. And all of this made David tremble and fear that the horror has overwhelmed me. It's interesting when he uses that phrase, I am severely pained. Willem van Gemeren, in his commentary, says that the idea behind that phrasing in the Hebrew is something like a woman in labor pains. This is what van Gemeren said. He said, his heart is palpitating like a woman in labor. It's just his heart seems to be leaping out of his chest, and he's facing the terrors of death. I like what was said about this by one commentator. He says, he can do nothing but groan or moan. His heart writhes within him like an avalanche. Deadly terrors have fallen on him and crushed him. Fear and trembling have pierced into his inner being, and horror wraps him around or covers him as a cloak does. That was by Alexander McLaren, in a very, very well put expression of what David's heart was. So in response to all this, look at David's reaction in verse 6. This is the phrase that he used. He said, oh, that I had wings like a dove. David just wished that he could escape this terror-filled situation, fly away, and as verse 7 says, remain in the wilderness. Now, it's likely that David wrote this under the stress and under the intrigues of power once he came to the throne. He just longed for the simpler days when he saw God's faithfulness in the wilderness again and again and again. He said, I wish I could just go back to those simpler days. Verse 8, he says, I would hasten my escape from the windy storm and tempest. You know, David wouldn't be the first person who came from very humble surroundings and beginnings, who was exalted and promoted up into a position of high responsibility, who then longed for the simpler days. I just imagine David thinking of himself as a simple shepherd in Israel, as a simple shepherd there in the wilderness, watching the sheep and going, you know, those days were pretty good. If David had the wings of a bird, he would simply escape from his present problems. Most of us can identify with David's longing, can't you? By the way, isn't it a great comfort to us? And Derek Kidner makes this point in his commentator. It's a great comfort to us to know that there are spiritual giants that have had that exact same feeling. Now, sometimes they have given in to that feeling. Do you remember when Elijah said, I got to get out of here. I just got to escape. Others withstood it, like Jeremiah. Jeremiah felt like he had to run, but he stayed put where he was. David was in that place. He goes, oh, I just wish I could get away from all of this. Now notice, David wanted to simply escape, but he didn't. Again, I like what Alexander McLaren had to say about this. He said this, quote, so the psalmist's wish was only a wish. And he, like the rest of us, had to stand to his post or be tied to a stake and let the enemies and storms do their worst. And that's where David is. He's not liking his situation. He wishes he could escape it, but he's going to hang in there and see what God does. And what he's doing right now is he's going to pour out his heart to God, beginning at verse 9, and he's going to do it with some fury. In the first section, we saw David's fear. Now, in this second section, we're going to see David's fury as he asks God to deal with his enemies. Ready for this? Verses 9, 10, and 11. Destroy, O Lord, and divide their tongues. For I have seen violence and strife in the city. Day and night they go around it on its walls. Iniquity and trouble are also in the midst of it. Destruction is in its midst. Oppression and deceit do not depart from its streets. Verse 9, David says, Lord, I pray that you would destroy my enemies and divide their tongues. Now, there are repeated references to what his enemies said. That's in verse 3, verse 9, verse 11, verse 12. From this, we gather the sense that at least one part, and I'm saying maybe it was only one aspect, but at least one aspect of the crisis that David had to deal with was some kind of whispering attack upon David that was serious enough to endanger his life. So what does he do? He prays that God would divide those who spoke evil against him. Now, if this psalm is connected to Absalom's rebellion and Ahithophel's treason, by the way, that's an if, we don't know for sure, but if it is connected to Absalom's rebellion and Ahithophel's treason, the answer to that prayer was recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 17, when there was a division of opinion among Absalom's advisors, Ahithophel and Hushai. That's what God did. He divided their tongues. So maybe that does fit in that situation. But in any regard, there was great difficulty in the city, probably Jerusalem, that David's talking about in verse 9 when he says, I have seen violence and strife in the city. The attacks against David may have begun with words, but they didn't end with words. People walk the city day and night, causing trouble for David. And the crisis at hand was not merely a problem for David, but also for God's people in general. Like what Charles Spurgeon had to say about this. He said, quote, the city, the holy city, had become a den of wickedness. Conspirators met in the dark and talked in little gatherings in the streets, even in broad daylight. So much so that the city was unsafe. Look at what he says here in verse 11. Destruction is in its midst. Oppression and deceit do not depart from its streets. The instability, the intrigue made the whole city unsafe. So now David's thinking about this and is going to continue in verses 12 through 14 where he says this. For it is not an enemy who reproaches me. Then I could bear it. Nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me. Then I could hide from him. But it was you, a man, my equal, my companion and my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked in the house of God in the throng. Do you hear David's heart in verses 12, 13, and 14? He's crying out before God and he says, Lord, it's not an enemy who reproaches me. I could bear it then. No, there was a specific person who spoke against David. That's what it means, reproaches. And this was someone who was once aligned with David, who nevertheless exalted himself against the king in this particular instance. Now, verse 13, he says, it was you, a man, my equal, my companion, and my acquaintance. This unnamed man, who again we suspect was Ahithophel, as described in 2 Samuel chapters 15 through 18. We suspect it to be Ahithophel, but we don't know for sure. But that unnamed man was a partner and a friend to David. They used to help each other with advice. Verse 14 says that they took sweet counsel together, and they even went to the house of God together. Now, it's so interesting here. David talking about being betrayed by a companion, an acquaintance, an equal. It's just sort of interesting that this was the same thing that David did to somebody else. Oh, not to King Saul, but to Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba. Now, we don't know exactly when the events described in Psalm 55 happened in David's life. We don't know if it was before or after his sin with Bathsheba and the cover-up of the murder of Uriah. Of course, if it was associated, as seems likely but not certain, that it was associated with Absalom's rebellion and Ahithophel's treason, then it definitely happened after David's sin with Bathsheba and his murder of Uriah. But the connection of David's words here with his sin against Uriah is stunning. What David is describing that somebody did against him is what David did to Uriah. David was treacherous to Uriah. David was on an equal, or Uriah was on an equal. They were both like elite special forces soldiers. They were companions. They were acquaintances. No doubt that they took sweet counsel together. And there's something just striking in this, that David is showing the great pain in his heart, doing to having receiving from somebody else that which he did to Uriah himself. Now, that's just sort of a side point of interest. Let's come back to the psalm and take a look at verse 15, where David asks God to take vengeance upon these enemies. This is what he says. Let death seize them. Let them go down alive into hell, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. Now, this is a remarkably strong statement, don't you believe? It shows how dangerous this man was to the peace of God's people and how deeply he had wounded David. David wouldn't do this if he was just like personally offended or his feelings were hurt or something like that. No, this man was a danger not only to David, but to the kingdom of God's people there. This was a strong prayer, but at the same time, let's remember, this was a prayer that left vengeance to God. When David says, let death seize them, he's not saying, I'm going to kill them. When David says, let them go down alive into hell, David says, I can't send them to hell. Again, this is a prayer that left vengeance to God. David refused to take the vengeance himself. Then we also see in verse 15 how he says, for wickedness is in their dwellings and among them. David called upon God to bring such severe judgment upon these ones because the wickedness was so deeply ingrained with them. Now, it is, again, interesting that David doesn't specifically mention Ahithophel or Absalom. I don't know if it makes it more likely or less likely that the psalm is connected with that period. But it's interesting. With verse 16, we come now into the third aspect of the psalm. The first aspect was David's fear. That was verses 1 through 8. Now we have the second aspect of fury. That was David's words in verses 9 through 15. Now, starting with verse 16, we have the third aspect of the psalm, David's finding faith. He moves from fear to fury, now to faith, starting verse 16. He says, as for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. Evening and morning and at noon, I will pray and cry aloud, and he shall hear my voice. He has redeemed my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. For there were many against me. God will hear and afflict them, even he who abides from of old, Selah. Because they do not change, therefore they do not fear God. Now, David very abruptly switched. Verses 13 and 14, he's praying for the destruction. Verse 15, he's calling down great destruction upon his enemies, that whole section there. He abruptly switches from praying for destruction to declaring his calm confidence in the Lord. Now, this is a further indication that David was able to leave his crisis in the hands of the Lord. He was able to leave his enemies in the hands of the Lord, trusting that God was going to save him. Did you see that line in verse 16? As for me, I will call upon God, and the Lord shall save me. What a beautiful heart. What a beautiful line. David says, Lord, I believe you're going to deal with my enemies. Get them, God. Get them good. But for me, I'm having my eyes on you. You're the one who's going to save me. And that's why he says in verse 17, evening and morning and at noon, I will pray. David's confidence in God was rooted in sincere dependence on God, and that was demonstrated by constant prayer. How often did he pray? Evening, morning, noon. Basically, all through the day he was praying. Together, all this gave David the confidence in God to say, "He shall hear my voice," as it says there in verse 17. It's interesting here that David just remarks maybe three times that he's praying. Adam Clark made the kind of interesting statement that David phrased this evening and morning, where we might more naturally say morning and evening. But remember, the Hebrews began their day in the evening. That's why he says at the beginning of the day, that's evening, and at the continuation of the day, morning, and then at noon, I will pray. Again, just David saying, all day long, I'm going to show that I'm depending on you. And brothers and sisters, let's be clear about this. There is no greater, well, I don't know if I'd say that. Let me rephrase this. I'll just put it this way. Our prayer is a great demonstration of our dependence on God. Maybe there's greater ones. I'm not going to get in the relative discussion of that right now. But let's just say this. Our dependence on God is often measured by our prayers. How do you pray? How much do you pray? How sincerely do you pray? How earnestly do you pray? Those are great measuring marks to see how much you may really, truly trust in God in this. Now, verse 18. He has redeemed my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. David felt that his soul had been rescued, that is bought out or redeemed from the turmoil and the crisis, and he had been brought into peace. Now, the battle was still continuing. He says there in verse 18 that there were still many against him, but his soul was in peace. Brothers and sisters, have you come to that same place that David came to in Psalm 55, verse 18, where the battle can still rage, but you can have peace? He has redeemed my soul in peace from the battle that was against me. Do you have to have the battle over before you can have peace? Or can you be like David, that even in the midst of the battle, you can have God's peace? He had this confidence because what he says of God in verse 19, where he says this, God will hear and afflict them, even he who abides from of old. David was confident that the eternal God would answer his prayer. And he would do it because, look at that phrase in verse 19, because they do not change, therefore they do not fear God. The sense of that phrase, do not change, to be honest, the different Bible commentators and Hebrew understanding of that, it's a little bit obscure. It likely refers to the idea that they don't change for the better, or they have not had to change because of adversity. Maybe they've had very few trials or afflictions in life, and they just felt they never had to change anything. But the process was this, that there was not change in their life. They did not fear God. And David goes on and continues to describe in verses 20 and 21 the treachery of his enemy. He says this, he has put forth his hands against those who were at peace with him. He has broken his covenant. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords. Now, in verse 20, he's put forth his hand against those who were at peace with him. He's broken the covenant. David's unnamed enemy was also treacherous. He broke peaceful relationships, and he broke agreements with other people. But he did it all smoothly. Did you see that phrase in verse 21? The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. I just think it's kind of interesting. He talks about the words of his heart being, words of his mouth being smoother than butter. And then at the end of verse 21, he says they were drawn swords. It's kind of like drawn butter there. He's using repetition, vivid images. David showed how dishonorable his unnamed enemy was. Now, in contrast to that, we see how honorable David was, check this out, in not specifically naming the man. Well, we're kind of left here in the place of assuming it was Absalom, thinking that Absalom's associate in this was Ahithophel. But we don't know for certain. Because David, with a lot of grace in his heart, will not specifically name his enemy. Now, with the last couple verses of this psalm, verses 22 and 23, David's going to confidently leave the matter in God's hands. Ready? Cast your burden on the Lord, and he shall sustain you. He shall never permit the righteous to be moved. But you, O God, shall bring them down to the pit of destruction. Bloodthirsty and deceitful men shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in you. What a beautiful thing there in verses 22 and 23. David begins with this wise advice to each and every one of us. He says in verse 22, cast your burden on the Lord, and he shall sustain you. There are few greater burdens to bear than a one-time friend who became a treacherous and dangerous enemy. Man, that hurts just down to the deepest part of the heart. And David knew that even that burden was something that God could bear and God should bear. Matter of fact, in New Testament times, Peter seems to allude to this line in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, where he says, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Do you see how that relates to that line in verse 22? Cast your burden on the Lord. I like what Charles Spurgeon had to say about that line. He said this, if I cast my burden upon the Lord, what business have I to carry it myself? How can I truthfully say that I have cast it upon him if I am still burdened with it? That's what you need to do, brother, sister. Take those burdens, take those cares, and cast them upon the Lord. Cast your burden on the Lord, and he shall sustain you, as David says in verse 22. And then he continues on. He says, again in verse 22, he shall never permit the righteous to be moved. David had hope and confidence because he was persuaded that his fate did not rest in the hands of treacherous men. God was still Lord over all. God was still on the throne, and God would have the final word on whether or not the righteous would be moved. And you know what? God would look out for his righteous ones. Again, isn't it wonderful how we just see this progression throughout this psalm from fear, verses 1 through 8, to fury, verses 9 through 15, and now finally to faith, verse 16 to verse 23. G. Campbell Morgan, who suggested that kind of arrangement of the psalm, says this, fear leads only to desire to flee. That was David in the first several verses. I want to get out of here. Fury only emphasizes the consciousness of the wrong. Faith alone creates courage. G. Campbell Morgan, thank you for those wise words. I mean, just consider the whole thing there. When David was afraid, he wanted to leave. I mean, he hung in there, but he wanted to leave. When he asked God to get him, he was even more aware of the wrongs done against him. But when he needed courage, he looked to God in faith. And as part of that faith, he says there in verse 23, you, O God, shall bring them down to the pit of destruction. The faithful God would not only help and establish the righteous, he would also bring down those bloodthirsty and deceitful men who caused so much trouble among God's people. At the end of it all, look at how David ends the psalm, verse 23, but I will trust in you. This psalm appropriately ended with David's focus upon God, not upon his enemies. He's not thinking about his enemies at the end of the psalm. His eyes are on the Lord. I will trust in you. David would trust in the Lord and not be disappointed. According to Derek Kidner there, in that last line in the Hebrew text, when David says, but I will trust in you, the I is emphatic. It's just sort of like he's getting rid of any kind of focus upon the enemy. He's saying, listen, I'm going to trust in the Lord. Forget about you enemies. My focus is on the Lord. It's me and the Lord in this together. Beautiful, powerful psalm, Psalm 55. Let's consider now, before we leave our time in the psalm, by considering how this psalm may point to Jesus. Now, just like in any text from the Old Testament, there's perhaps innumerable ways that this text points to Jesus. I selected four. Let's take a look at four ways that Psalm 55 points to Jesus. Number one, Jesus is the one who was hated without cause. In verse 3, we read of David's enemies. It says there, "In wrath they hate me." Now that was true of David, of course. He wrote the psalm. But how much more true was it of David's descendant Jesus, who was hated without any cause whatsoever? They hated David. They hated Jesus even more. Secondly, we see that Jesus is the one who could have escaped his troubles, but he did not. In verse 6, David said, "Oh, that I had wings like a dove, I would fly away and be at rest." Now, Jesus obviously did not have the literal wings of a dove, but he certainly could have gone anywhere and done anything that he wanted to do. Jesus could have escaped all of his problems, all of them, but he did not. Jesus fulfilled what his God and Father called him to do and called him to endure. I was just struck by that by reading verse 6, thinking that David says, "Man, I would escape if I could." But Jesus could have escaped and did not. Now, a third way that Psalm 55 points to Jesus is found in verse 13. We see that Jesus is the one who was betrayed by his companion. In verse 13, David spoke to God about my companion and my acquaintance who turned against him. Now, when Judas betrayed Jesus, this was more perfectly fulfilled in the life of Jesus, but it was all in the plan of God to accomplish our redemption. Jesus was betrayed, and God used what Judas did to bring Jesus to the cross. But of course, it does not excuse Judas in the slightest, but it simply uses the evil act of Judas. In that, we see three precious ways that Psalm 55 points to Jesus. I know we could go on and fourth, fifth, whatever. No doubt there's more than that. But I hope that those three speak to your heart. And I pray that this psalm speaks to your heart. This ability to move from fear to fury, and fury at least that you bring to the Lord, but to end up in that place of faith where you can say right along with David as he says in verse 23, "But I will trust in you." Let's pray to that effect right now. Father in heaven, we ask that for everybody who views this or listens to this, that you would indeed speak to their heart in a powerful way. And that, Father, you would enable them, if right now in this moment they are in a place of fear, maybe they're in a place of fury, so angry at what other people have done against them, and they pour out their heart to you in their fear, in their fury. Lord, I pray that you would move them truly to that place of faith. Lord, where truly we settle in the place where we trust in you. Lord, David shows us that it's not necessarily a sin to be in a place of fear. It's not necessarily a sin to be in fury and to lay it out before God. But Lord, you want us to settle in the place of faith. Help us to do that, Lord. Help us to do it for your honor and glory. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray this. Amen.